What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Welcome back to AmericaTrendsPodcast.com. We're not going to do the traditional open today, John. We're not going to do just you and I back and forth.
Okay? We're not.
No.
How come?
We got to change things up a little bit here.
Right.
We don't want to get stale.
That's
but
right.
It's because
right.
We have got in our studio. Now, this is rare. Most of our guests are on the telephone, right?
I know. We got a live guest.
Well, how'd you get him? How'd you reel him in?
I caught him in the parking lot.
Caught him in the parking lot, snagged him, said, we hope he has some benefit to our audience. And believe me, he does. This guy... There's no facsimile. There's no replica. He is an American original. I mean, he really is. And he wears many hats. Several of them are magical, John. Have you ever seen him do the magic?
No, miss the magic.
No. Well, I'll tell you, what he's doing here in the city that we broadcast from is magical, too. But he has attended some really important schools that are also magical. By day, he serves as the refuse and recycling coordinator for a city of over 100,000 people, Waterbury. And he is involved with the recycling trash pickup service for more than 30,000 households.
Wow. Now, that's a lot of households to keep track of.
To think about that, yeah. And this is after 20 years as the recycling coordinator at Yale University.
Wow, okay.
Now, weren't we talking about Yale recently?
We were
recently?
Talking about Yale,
yeah.
Yes.
We were comparing it to Harvard.
The esteemed university.
Yeah, it's a great university. And believe me, his credentials are remarkable. Let's bring him in. I mean, he's right here. We're talking about him. This is like, he's at his own wake or something. We don't want that. C.J. May, and he received his master's in environmental management from Yale University School of Forestry and Environmental Studies, and he does magic, and he teaches kids and adults about the importance of recycling. CJ, with your background, because you're still very involved doing the magical arts, what do you find more exciting these days, talking about recycling, repurposing, or the magic, or how do you combine all this?
Well, it's a really good question. I think the big excitement for me is showing people how magical they are. The challenges that we face in the city of Waterbury and around the country and around the whole world are pretty daunting if you consider them all together. Climate change, pollution, resource loss, political issues that we're all facing. But the real wonderful thing is that magic can remind us how magical a simple thing can be, whether it's recycling a can or a bottle, whether it's cutting down on pollution, whether it's doing one thing or another that will save us energy. Everybody is more powerful than they expect, just as Harry Potter learned that he was more powerful than he ever expected, getting his invitation to Hogwarts.
And you wanted to go to that wizard school. I mean, you went to a fine school at Yale, but you wanted to go there, didn't you?
Oh, I think everybody, you see, that ship has sailed for me. I think every 11-year-old in the United States looks to their mailbox and hopes that there will be a letter from Hogwarts inviting them to come and learning that they're not really a muggle. Well, I started doing magic too late, far after 11 years old.
John, I know that these issues of environmental concern to you are something that you think about.
Oh, yeah. Well, my wife is. She is the recycler. She recycles everything.
And she composts, too,
yes,
right?
She composts, right?
So I mean, people are doing all kinds of things. But are we as aware? I mean, when the town dump closed, and I remember a documentary that I was involved with many, many years ago, back in the early 90s, late 80s, and we did title it Town Dump Closed. What happened? I mean, how big a change has there been in terms of the way that we repurpose our waste?
It's a good question. I would say a huge change and not enough. The huge change is that we, in Connecticut just specifically, is that we are generally burning our trash instead of landfilling it or putting in a dump.
In Connecticut, and that's an improvement.
And it's both an improvement and a cause for some concern. The improvement is that when you burn your trash, you're reducing the volume by 80%. That's good because it costs money to put that stuff into a dump or a landfill. And you're also generating some electricity when you're burning paper or plastic. High BTU items burn, give you some energy. But burning food waste, it's wet. Burning some things like glass doesn't generate any benefit. So you also don't want to burn things that you really don't get any value out of. I think it's a stopgap that Connecticut really put into place, and it has helped us out for the last several decades. But I think everyone's realizing that that is the – that's lower on the pyramid. What we really need to be pursuing is indeed recycling and actually reducing. Let's not generate this stuff to begin with.
And how do you go about that process? I know a lot of people, even with energy, they say, well, we're going from various fossil fuels to natural gas. That's a little bit better, but we've got to get to solar. We've got to get to wind and the like. So are we on that same transition in the area of reuse and management of our waste?
I hope so. I think we're certainly doing a lot better in terms of recycling. And, you know, many municipalities are being good citizens and taking it a step further in terms of what John's wife's doing in composting. When you have communities like the Bay Area, San Francisco and Portland and Washington State, they are diverting more than 50 or 60% of their trash, what people throw away, to either recycling or composting. And
that's a leadership position in
and
the country?
That's ahead of what we are doing.
Well, where are most states? Yeah.
So where the average recycling rate for your municipality is about 35%, you know, about a third.
And what does that mean about the other 65%?
Then the other 65% for most of the United States is going to a landfill.
Okay.
And just to go into the terminology, a dump was just a hole in the ground. You dumped the stuff there, literally. A landfill is a high-tech dump, meaning that it has a giant thick liner underneath it, like your pool liner, but much tougher, that it's capped every day to make sure that stuff doesn't get out. They do a lot of protections to make sure that if there is liquid accumulating, it is captured, the leachate is treated properly to make sure that it doesn't get a cesspool of tea, of nasty chemicals going into the water. So a landfill is certainly a step up from a dump, but we don't want to put stuff into the landfill if we don't have to, especially when that stuff is generally valuable. And I think this is the problem we've gotten. We have gotten so efficient at making things, we're very efficient at wasting.
Well, that brings me to the point. Are we actually making money off recycling? Like, we bring our bottles back.
Sure.
We bring, you know, we're collecting cardboard. Are like Waterbury or any city making money from their recycling?
Indeed, in generally, yes. And it really depends upon the material. But in general, Waterbury makes about $4.25 a ton for every ton of cans, bottles, papers, and cardboard boxes that we send through our recycling trucks to the local recycling facility. They pay us for it because that is material wanted by industry. And there are even groups like the Closed Loop Fund, which is helping Waterbury purchase bigger recycling carts that realize the United States isn't doing enough. Waterbury's recycling rate is very low, 6%. Big municipalities...
6%.
Six. Big municipalities in Connecticut and elsewhere often have very low recycling rates.
I wonder if people need to know that they're actually making money from it.
Well, this is one of the big things that I use magic to push here in Waterbury. And it's a lot of fun because I can talk to a room full of people that's going to be a mixture of old and young, Democrat and Republican, Hillary supporter and Trump supporter. And I say, I'm here to talk to you not about recycling and magic. I'm here to talk to you about money. And I pull out my wallet.
Right.
I'm here to talk to you about your money, taxpayer money. Waterbury spends $2 million a year to throw away trash, to send it to the waste-to-energy plant in Bristol.
And not only Waterbury, this is nationwide.
Nationwide.
Right?
And but I said, the neat thing is we could get actually paid. And I pull out a $5 bill out of my wallet, and I say, if Waterbury puts recyclables in the recycling bin, we get paid. If we put it into the trash bin, we have to pay to have that burned in Bristol. And so if we recycle, we're not only making money, but we're saving the $63 to send it to Bristol. But if we don't recycle, and that's when my wallet catches on fire.
Sorry.
That's when my wallet catches on fire. The wallet catches on fire, and then I bring the $5 bill over to it, and I catch the $5 bill on fire, and it goes up into a big flash of smoke and flame.
I wish we were doing video on this podcast.
And we say to them, but if we don't recycle, all the money we'd make and all the money that we would save goes up in smoke. And the wonderful thing is, in a country that is so divided at this point, still so divided, I can say, what's better, earn money or burn money?
Yeah,
and everybody knows it's better to earn money than burn
money. Absolutely.
And everybody, John, you brought us into a really interesting area that I've got to get CJ to comment on. Because if it's all about the money, and we say that as it relates to so many issues, follow the money. How much of this is based on the commodity prices? In other words, paper is strong, I was reading. Aluminum prices are below where they were. In other words, glass, I mean, is there a market for it? Are there markets for different forms of waste and not for others?
Absolutely. I'm glad you're asking the nuanced question. The markets vary widely, and plastics are down, aluminum is down, all that stuff is down. Why? Because oil is low. I mean, oil has bumped up from 10 years ago, certainly. But it has dropped enough to the point where people can say, gosh, you know, I could buy these recycled plastics and make new plastics from them. Or I can just go buy virgin barrels of oil. And if the price gets low enough, recycling for plastic doesn't look as good. So that's one thing. Paper, et cetera. Generally, there's still a benefit for it. And, of course, other people would argue that it's not a level playing field. If there are subsidies in terms of tax breaks, in terms of exploration, or in terms of using federal land to explore for oil or natural gas and other things like that, that's taxpayer helping industries make fossil fuels into plastics instead of helping recycling. And so they're actually doing a disservice to taxpayers and the municipality at the federal level. And if some of the issues that we're finding out about fracking and oil are true, that's a lot of pollution going on, or even earthquakes going on, depending on what you read, then we are actually making a debt that must be paid by future generations so that we can have cheap plastics today. Right. This is not conservative or liberal. This is bad. And it's basically saying we're going to get good today, and I really care about what happens 10 years from now.
And who controls the dynamic in these industries? Waste management is a big name. We all see them on trucks, right, John? Yep. WM. Yep. And then there's Republic Services. And Waste Management just announced that they were moving away from weight-based goals in favor of measuring greenhouse gas reduction in their sustainability report in 2016. What does that mean to the industry if they're the leader?
That's a big, big change as far as I'm concerned. And I think weights are something we're always going to pay attention to. Garbage people just love weights. How many tons? We're all into the weight thing, you know. But the fact that they're looking at greenhouse gas is another shift. Just as the president has pulled the United States out of the Paris Climate Accords, you still have municipalities and corporations in saying, no, we're going to pay attention to greenhouse gases. It's great that Waste Management is thinking about that too. So they're looking at the bottom line, of course, they're a corporation, but they're also thinking, if I can borrow a term, bigly. They're thinking bigly because they're thinking beyond their bottom line, and that's appropriate because we need to realize that we're in a global environment here now, not just a corporate, narrow-minded environment.
And John, you and I both own Subarus. I mean, let's just talk about it.
Right.
And on the back of our car, what does it say? Something about zero waste or emissions or something
right,
of that.
Right.
I know that a lot of these communities have these diversion rates. And tell us what a diversion rate is and what zero waste as a goal really means.
Oh, those, we could call me back for another couple hours and we'll talk about that. But so, diversion rate can be defined in different ways, but let's say simply that diversion rate probably is your recycling rate plus your composting rate plus, if you could prove that we shifted away from disposable plastic bags and we had everybody using reusable bags, if you could measure that, and that's almost impossible to measure, you could include that too. So you could say, okay, we have 100,000 tons, but we diverted a third of that by recycling and a third of that by composting, and another 10% by this, that your overall diversion would be. I mean, stuff that we're not sending to the trash. So that's diversion rate. And then the second question was zero waste. Zero waste is a bugbear, but it's a beautiful.
What do you mean a bugbear?
A bugbear is when people started talking about zero waste, gosh, 25 or 30 years ago, they said, oh, it's a bunch of idealistic, crazy people who are going to be shooting for zero waste. The idea would be to never create anything that was thrown away. that everything.
Okay,
so
when Subaru says that on the back of a car, like our Outbacks, what does that mean?
Well, I would love to. I'd love to go to their plant, which probably means they haven't gotten to zero waste. Almost nobody has. It's the holy grail of all waste management, and we're not talking about trash or recycling. You're talking about sustainable materials management. That's the new term, and it's a worthwhile term because we have to realize that it's not just about trash and recycling as opposed to resources. Trash and recycling is resources. If you put in the recycling, you get value out of it. If you take the same can and you put it into the trash, it's costing you. It's just which bucket do you put it into? But sustainable materials management seeks to make sure that we're not putting anything in the dumpster. We want to empty the dumpster and have everything be recycled, be composted, or be reused again and again and again. If you can do that, then we don't have anything to throw away. And the idea, and people say that's ludicrous. We can't possibly do that. Nature's been doing that for millions of years. Nothing gets thrown away. I was in the woods once. A squirrel ate an acorn. It dropped the shell on the ground. That shell on the ground was trash to the squirrel, but that became part of the dirt. That became part of the tree, which grew more acorns.
John, I love this little parable going into the woods. I love that. Now, why is it that, for example, certain materials like glass are such a challenge for those of you in the recycling industry?
When we were kids, though, we'd bring the bottles back, and then they would put soda in them, and it would be truly recycling because they would reuse the bottle.
That was even better. That's reuse and out in
I don't know why they got away from that.
Because we've gotten to, indeed, more of a disposable society, and because there's some economics. For instance, out in Washington State, they have reusable bottles because there's a local brewery, and it has such a tight market. Sending the bottle back is only a few miles. It makes sense to reuse a heavier-duty, more expensive bottle there instead of shipping it back from Connecticut to Washington State, which would not make sense.
Okay, I see.
So if you're Budweiser and you're sending stuff all over the country, it doesn't necessarily make sense to send that bottle all the way back to Budweiser in Nebraska. So that's one good point, but it's a good one. The issue, glass is a thorny issue.
Yeah,
it's probably the thorniest issue right now for a number of reasons. One is single stream. Single stream recycling is the way of the world at this point, which means you're collecting all recyclables together in one bin, paper, glass, metal, plastic, cardboard, all that gets together, and then it's sorted out. And our sorting technology has gotten so good we can sort it out, but not really, really well, so that the glass people get paper in them and they don't like it and it's a mess. The paper people get glass in it and it's a mess. The plastics and metal people are pretty happy. Plastics and metal are good. You got anything in with the metal and you melt it down at 5,000 degrees or whatever it might be, it's gone. It's so you get the metal back. But it doesn't work for glass. So the glass is a mixture of good, bad, and ugly altogether. And so the markets for glass, or the saleability of the glass collected by single stream, has plummeted. And it's very hard to do that. There is a benefit to what we're doing now in Connecticut and the few states that have bottle bills or deposit and redemption laws, is that when you collect glass by putting it into that little redemption machine, or you send it back
which
to the liquor
often
store,
kicks it back.
Well, if it doesn't have the right, it has the right barcode or the wrong barcode, that glass is not mixed in with anything else and it's clean.
Okay.
So redemption technology gets you clean glass, and so that's one of the reasons in Connecticut recycling advocates have been pushing to actually expand our bottle bill so that more materials are collected.
I find separate. The bottle bill is because we're paying for recycling, our curbside recycling, and then we're paying for the hassle of taking it back to the store.
Oh, well, you're also using a bit of energy to take it back to the store. What would you say to that?
Well, I would say that there's a big difference between doing something efficiently and doing something effectively. People who just want to have curbside recycling say it's the most efficient way to do it. You know, you just put in your curbside bin and it gets picked up. And you're right. You don't have to go back to the store.
And then if the bottle didn't come from that store, it rejects it. So now you're onward.
Running around. Yeah.
You have to go around. So but, I mean, but that would
they
be.
They haven't made it simple, except I give them all to the Boy Scouts and that takes care of it.
Well, here's the point is one thing I would say, I would go back to what Benjamin Franklin says. And Benjamin Franklin says, there's no tax that any government can give us more heavy than the tax we put upon ourselves by laziness. And his point would, if he was asked about the bottle, he says, well, no, it's not a tax. You can get that 5 cents back. You just have to bring it back. And it is a hassle. I agree with you there. But the point is, when you don't have a bottle bill, and the states, there are about 40 states in the country that don't have bottle bills, they recover about 30% of their containers, cans, bottles, that sort of thing.
Okay.
For the states, the 10 or so states that have bottle bills, they have recovery rates between 60 and 90%. And here's the big reason is that not everybody recycles,
right.
Not even at curbside. You and your wife may be dedicated recyclers, but a lot of people say, I don't want to bother. But if there's a nickel there, they'll do it. And here's the bigger thing. It's not even a household issue. The biggest issue is away from home. Cans and bottles have skyrocketed in terms of their usage because we are now an away-from-home society in terms of when we consume and where we consume our beverages. It's most often away from home. We're driving around. We're at the baseball stadium. We're at the park having a picnic. Those cans and bottles too often end up on the ground
litter,
or they end up as trash. But guess what? If they're ending up on the ground because I was too lazy,
somebody
and there's
else
a nickel deposit
nickel.
In the state with a bottle bill, they're going to get picked up by because it's worth 5 cents.
And we do see a lot of people who
That's
are
true.
Indigent going around with all those bottles that they have found all over the society. What about the notion that we really now look at the recycling bin and we say that is all going to be recycled and we feel so good about ourselves because we're winning the competition on our street. And yet you say that there is perhaps some pollution in that single stream.
Well, I wouldn't say pollution, but indeed the contamination issue is significant. So the biggest issue I would point to is two big issues. One is wish cycling. And
wish
cycling is a great term. So I'll give you a great example, a real term. So I happened to, as the new recycling coordinator for the city of Waterbury, I was driving in one day and we were working on one neighborhood, really trying to help that neighborhood recycle. So I said, let me just pull off and see what's going on because it's collection day for that neighborhood. So I pull off and lo and behold, there's the recycling truck. I said, this is awesome. I'm going to get to watch the recycling
audit,
truck in action.
Audit in progress.
I get excited when I see recycling trucks.
No, I think it's good because you're really getting research on the ground.
And it was great. So this truck went down one street. The driver jumps out of the truck because we're using the old technology where you have to jump out of the truck. He walked over to our curbside bin, looked in the bin, and he shrugged his shoulders and threw up his hands in some form of disappointment or even disgust. And it was like, uh-oh, this is not good. He jumps back in his truck and starts to drive to the next house. I park my car and I walk up to the bin just as the homeowner is walking out of his house and looking in the bin. He does the exact same end. He throws his arms up in a shrug and in disgust because the guy didn't pick it up. And he says, hey, he didn't pick up my bin. And I look into the bin and the bin has cans and bottles. It also has a sheet of window glass. It has a China cup, a China bowl. It had all these things which couldn't be recycled. Now, often people would respond to this and get angry. That's not the right response. This person was doing his best to recycle as much as he possibly could. So therefore, he's my friend if I can keep him that way. So what I said was, thank you so much for recycling. We really appreciate you putting the bin out with all these things there. But there's a couple things that we can't recycle. And he got upset because he'd done this hard work. What do you mean? What do you mean? He says, well, that kind of glass in the China. Well, it's all glass, isn't it? And he said, no, actually, there's different kinds of glass. And we can only recycle, say, bottle glass and jar glass from food and beverage containers, not from windows and not from China cups. And he went, and he kind of grumbled. And I thought I had given him some information before because we had met before. He was an enthusiastic recycler, but I pulled out more information to ensure that he understood. So he, like many people, gets excited about recycling, but throws in materials because they think, oh, because it's single stream now, I can put in the kitchen sink. Yeah. You can't do
literally.
That. And so we have to realize here's the onus on us. Yeah. As curbside recyclers in a single stream world, we are captains of industry. We are feeding materials to American factories and even overseas factories. We're exporting our cans, bottles, and papers, or sending it to another place to be made back into materials we can use. So we really need to put the right materials in there. And so that's one.
But that takes a lot of education.
It does. So that's why we're doing the big education issue. And I think that's the big problem for City of Waterbury, as well as many other municipalities. There's a big push in Connecticut, as well as other states, back in the early 90s. Push, recycling, recycling, recycling. Recycling went up. People were educated. People were informed. And then budget cuts happened. And then people got busy with other things. And there was 9/11. There were so many other things that were distracting us that Waterbury, New Haven, where I live, and many other places cut their recycling education staff to the point where there were not any, period. The trucks were still going around, but I'll bet you the quality of that material went down and down and down because nobody was educating the citizenry.
So what happens when it leaves the community, goes somewhere, and there is all this stuff that is contraband that should not be in there? What
they
happens?
Have to sort it out, which requires staff time. If it's really bad, they will reject the load, and they will call Waterbury back up with the people to whom we gave it, and they will scream bloody murder and make them separate it out or charge them an enormous fee to clean the material up. And the contamination rates nationwide have been increasing. So single stream has increased the volume of materials we've been collecting. It's also been increasing the contamination.
Ah, really interesting.
So that's one downside. And so we really need to reboot our education. And I'm delighted that in Connecticut, for instance, they grabbed all five of the recycling processing companies, basically sat them in a room with a bunch of donuts and coffee cups, locked the door and said, okay, guys, let's not leave here until we all decide on one list of what goes in recyclables. For instance, one town might accept pizza boxes. Another town might not accept pizza boxes. One town accepts juice boxes. Another town doesn't accept juice boxes. It was driving everyone crazy. And what we need
because
is
a lot of these contractors service many different communities.
Indeed. And then we have many people like myself who live in one town and work in a different town. And if the guidelines are different, I work in the recycling business and it's still confusing to me. And so what they've done, and they actually just released this today, the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection got the list clear and they worked with a marketing team. When McDonald's or Nike or somebody wants to put out something, they don't just put a text message out on their website or something simple like that. They get a marketing team. And that's what DEEP has done for Connecticut. And so I'm really delighted that they've done that. And that's what we need to do nationwide.
Now, John, you've got a little bottle there that should go back for recycling.
Yes.
But if you left it here at the business, the establishment that we're producing from, this gets back to something you and I have talked about.
Yes.
What happens?
I've talked to it goes in the garbage.
When you consume at a business, well, yes. In many cases.
Yes, it goes in the garbage.
Indeed. And that's too bad, especially because that's about 5 cents right there. Well, does that have a 5 cent?
Oh, yeah. Yes. That's a nickel. So, well, even though it's a little chubby.
My question is, how come businesses in Waterbury or other places aren't required to recycle?
They are required to recycle, but it hasn't been enforced. And this is a big issue.
Is that nationwide?
Many towns have municipal enforcement officers. Connecticut Department of Energy and Environmental Protection, I think, has had one. For the entire state, and they are not, they don't have a badge and a ticket book that they can send out, but that's changing. And they're actually really going to be going back to businesses as well as, say, condos and apartment complexes and saying, we will help you set up recycling in your area. We're happy to do it. Here's a bunch of resources. And by the way, if 6 months from now you're not doing it, then the stick will come out as opposed to the carrot. And I think this has been welcome, because many people across Connecticut have been saying there's just no enforcement. You don't want to use the stick. You want to help people as far as you can. But eventually, there's some people who will not take action unless there's some concern that they're going to get in trouble if they don't.
I mean, CJ, you've been in this business a long time, 20 years as the recycling coordinator at Yale University, now in a mid-sized city. I mean, what is it that you look at as the model? Is there, you mentioned, and I think we cut you off, about San Francisco. Mm. What's going on there? Is that the model, or are there other places where
sure.
they've really got it together?
I think your question's a good one, and I think San Francisco, the whole Berkeley Bay area, as well as Portland, Oregon, and up in Seattle area, they're recovering, more than 60% of their, or diverting, to use your rate, diversion rate is more than 60%, and that's through a combination of recycling and composting. So you need to have the right bins, and it's a three-bin system, generally. A bin system which is one is for trash, one is for recycling, generally single stream, and then one is for organics, meaning food waste, leaves, grass. If you do that and combine it with really good education, and once in a while, a little bit of enforcement to ensure people are not doing the wrong thing, then my goodness, you can get more than 60% away from your trash, and you're going to be saving a huge amount of money. You're going to be sending resources back and creating jobs. When you put stuff into the trash, Sure, there's a few jobs created. When you put stuff into the waste-to-energy plants like we have in Connecticut, there are a few more jobs generated, and there's some energy being generated. But when you send stuff to recycling, you're putting people to work making things. I think that's what we're about. And it's so funny because people say, hey, we need to have more jobs here in the United States. Okay, let's start recycling.
Yeah, well, I didn't realize that. I'm glad you opened my eyes because I really thought we weren't making any money off this stuff that the towns were paying into this, but we weren't seeing any
financial
from it.
Well, there are going to be some more changes. If the oil price and the economy changing, we may not always be making money. And to be frank, some municipalities are not making money. It's a zero cost. They're not getting, but they able to tip that material for free,
okay,
as opposed to having to pay to discard it as trash. So there's always a savings associated with this. On the job side, though, I'm really delighted by a couple of things I see in the United States, in Connecticut here, as well as right here in Waterbury, that recycling isn't just about cans and bottles and cardboard boxes at curbside. It's all about green development and a circular economy. For instance, the city of Waterbury has a great business called Take Two. Take Two is at South Leonard Street. It's an industrial
area.
And now,
by the way, you're bringing us into an area that confuses a lot of us. No, about what we're doing with all of our digital equipment and
oh,
the like.
Oh, my gosh.
No, really. I mean, this is a huge area.
Well, here's a good factoid. That has to be updated, but I believe the factoid was that we throw away 98 million cell phones a year. But so that's the scary side.
Wow.
That's the scary side. But if you had 98 million cell phones, start to think about how much gold, copper, and silver are inside that, and how it's much easier to get precious metals out of a cell phone than it is to get it out of a mountain. So if we're throwing away gold, copper, and silver, we're just being foolish. And that's why Take Two is a sign of a new economy. Now, Waterbury.
Well, tell us what that is and how much that model that you're going to be telling us about is replicated across the country, because I think there's so much confusion about digital waste.
Yeah, sure. E-waste is a big issue. It's a growing issue. We began collecting that back in the 1990s at Yale as it was starting. Now I'm very happy to say that a lot of that's been shifted to a certain extent to here in the United States. The first big wave was collecting e-waste, sending it overseas, typically to China. They were recovering the copper, gold, and the silver, but at a huge expense to the local environment and the health of the local citizenry. There were no protections being put in place, and so the people were recovering them, putting computers into acid baths, and the burning off the plastic, and so the people were being poisoned, literally, for this. So you don't want to export harm, but we do want to export precious minerals if that can be done safely. That's why Take Two is a beautiful example. Waterbury was known as a manufacturing capital. So many of American cities were manufacturing capitals, and they lost that luster. But you can bring it back by being a remanufacturing capital or a demanufacturing capital. 50 people are employed right here in the city of Waterbury by Take Two, a gleaming example of green jobs. These people are assessing electronics such as televisions, computers, cell phones. If they're really good and can be reused, they can reuse them. Or they can even recover the chips, because chips can be quite valuable. If not, those electronics can be broken down so that the brass, the copper, the silver, the metals can be recovered. It's jobs right here.
Wow.
And we have to realize, or you could put into the dump and burn it. Should we burn those computers in Bristol, or should we put them to Take Two? So that's great. Another example of this is how we can put people back to work who might not have jobs. In Bristol, they are recycling mattresses. The typical people being hired by design are ex-cons. These are people who often get out of prison. They want a second chance at life, and they often cannot find a job. They go and work for this place. They learn how to disassemble mattresses to recover the fabric, the foam, the metals, all those materials. Work there. They get a good job with good benefits. And then maybe a couple years later, they want to go find another job. They've now got a resume. They've been doing good work, getting good pay, and they're recovering materials. So
and
recycling,
mattresses have been a huge problem.
Oh, mattresses
have they
are
not?
An enormous problem.
Yeah.
And that's why I love this. And in the long run, recycling shouldn't be just about giving resources a second chance. It should be about giving people a second chance and giving all of our countries and our city a second chance.
John, can you see why this guy is so effective in all the jobs that he does? Because he knows how to communicate about this issue that we're wrestling with. I've got to ask you about, you talked about government, its role to educate. You talked about the consumer and our need to be educated and aware, and the fact that we can make our streams much more effective and efficient and less polluted or contaminated. What about manufacturers? Because I know there's a lot of flexible packaging that's going on, and there's been so much waste in the way that people are packaging material. How many of us get something, and by the time we get down to the product, we're already three deep into some other materials?
Anything at Costco, or, you know, I mean, you got all this stuff.
Yeah, what's going on with flexible packaging?
That is, I will call it a bugbear now, and I'm hoping that it won't be a bugbear, a problem. Flexible packaging is something that we're generally not recycling at curbside. So, for instance, baby food is a good example. Now, I remember the little Gerber glass jars of baby food. Sure. It was a glass jar with a little metal lid. You unscrewed that. That lid in that glass jar, if it were still being sold in a supermarket, would be recyclable. Great. The flexible packaging typically is not being accepted for recyclables. It might be in the future. But here's my standard, and I believe this is put out by Bill McDonough, an environmental thinker. If we can't recycle something or can't compost it, we shouldn't make it. You know, nature doesn't make anything that can't be safely recovered. We shouldn't be making anything that can't safely be recovered. We've got 7 billion people on this planet. If we're all generating stuff that we can't recover, then we have a problem. And it's not just going out there, in terms of, landfills. If you go to any ocean on the planet and dip a 1 gallon pail into that ocean, anywhere, Antarctic or Arctic Ocean, and pull out, if you look at that water, the water will probably look fine. If you were to do an analysis of that water contains plastic and other materials, and almost all that came from land, not from ships going around the seas. It's coming from rivers, even from cities like Waterbury and other places. I like to eat fish. I think oceans are great. But we are actually harming our oceans with how we treat things on land. So we can deal with this. The whole point, and I love this, about industrial ecology is that we can put the brilliance in the entrepreneurial spirit that has made America great, that has built our industry, that has built factories and science that can put people on the moon, and we put it in the right direction. We can solve these problems. There was a great example of, I think it was one of the automakers, BMW in Europe, and they went and said to the engineers, can you design the car so that it can be taken apart more easily than cars can be taken apart? And the engineers said, well, give us, you know, 6 months. Engineers came back 6 months later and they said, yeah, we can do that. And they said, great, that's really good to know. And the CEO, whoever it was, about to leave, and the engineer said, oh, but there's something else. And he said, well, yeah, what is it? Oh, actually, it would be cheaper that way. And he said, what? Well, why didn't you tell us before? You never asked us. We've been focusing on so many things, but not the right ones. We need to work on this. We can do it.
John, what do you think about plastic bags? You just heard said downstream going into the oceans. Do you think we should be banning them? What do you think?
I often thought the paper was better. You know, we used it for our kids, and when we were kids, for book covers. I mean, we could reuse it.
Yeah.
It would disintegrate. I often thought paper was so much better than plastic, but
if I can give you a Twilight Zone story. A place that you guys know well, John Bale Bookstore. Mm-hmm. It's a coffee shop and a used bookstore right here in the city of Waterbury. So I was having lunch there with a woman whose father invented the plastic bag. And here's the strange Twilight Zone bit of it. He was a devout environmentalist. He observed the huge usage of paper bags in the 60s when he was active as an engineer. And he said, my goodness, because he at the time was part of a group of people who were very concerned about the excessive use of trees. Trees were being chopped down simply to make a paper bag.
Right.
And he said, this is unjust. This is not good. I'm going to make a plastic bag and it's going to solve the problem. Before the end of his life, he kind of regretted what he had done. He didn't expect it. Our planet now produces 1 trillion plastic bags every year, most of which are not recycled, most of which may get dumped into the trash, but too many of which end up either on our land, in our rivers, in our oceans, and they cause enormous problems. I used to think, oh, it's just an aesthetics issue. It's not. It's actually a planetary survival and health issue, because our ability to produce these bags has exceeded the wisdom with which we use them.
Now, I know that in California, they have voted a statewide ban on plastic bags. Hawaii's already been doing it for some time. San Francisco recently passed an act against styrofoam. Styrofoam as a twin to plastic. Help us with that.
My goodness. Styrofoam is, I would have to come back to the issue, and I think I am a short-term pragmatist and a long-term idealist. My short-term pragmatist is, gosh, I don't know if we have to ban styrofoam.
Well, is that
but recyclable? The long-term, generally not. Oh, no. Okay. And generally not. And also breaks apart. We don't want it in the bin.
Yeah,
but,
you see it.
But
it here's, really.
But we have to move away from that. We have to move away from these single-usage things. The only single-use thing that we should ever be having in our hand is something that is easily recyclable or easily compostable. And there has to be a ready place for it. So that if I'm taking a cup out of you know, Dunkin' Donuts, what's going to happen with that cup? I mean, if I do that once a day over the course of a year, that's 300 cups times, you know, 7 billion people on the planet. That means we've just taken a non-renewable resource, oil, and we've used it for 30 minutes of me drinking a coffee cup. That, to my mind, is not a wise use of our resources, especially when that same cup becomes a problem that will affect the health of myself as well as my family.
Well, in many cases, they then encourage you to bring your own cup.
Indeed.
And then they will refill and the like. Is that the responsible thing that we should all be doing?
I personally do so, myself, yeah. And I think we need to move in that direction. And back to the twin you said of plastic bags, I remember running into a friend of mine, and I don't know if he wants to be quoted in this, but he's very knowledgeable about industrial ecology and waste and trash and recycling. And he studies these things, not only the scientific aspects, but the legal aspects of it, you know, laws, bans, et cetera. And he said, well, what do you think about the, and I forgot which ban, I think Ireland has put in a ban in various mm-hmm. places. And he says, I don't like bans, but sometimes they work. And so to go cold turkey and say, okay, San Francisco, nope. Period, no plastic bags. And people say, oh, that means my meat is not going to be wrapped in plastic anymore. No, it just means that when you're checking out at the supermarket, you're not going to have a plastic bag. You can buy one. You can bring your own. We used to do that, you know? We used to be a reusable society instead of a disposable society.
Well, I know
society.
Our governor has used the example of picking up after your dog, and that's the reason that he's against that ban. What are some of the other products that we can use in place of how comfortable we've all gotten with either styrofoam or plastic?
Well, the reusable cup, certainly. I mean, styrofoam is not only used for cups, used for takeout trays, et cetera, et cetera. Those things to be redesigned could go through the process of putting into a biodegradable systems. Now, would it cost more? It might. It might in the short run. In the long run, though, I think we can shift over to something that's not going to cost us. We don't want to break the bank. But we have to realize that we also could be penny wise and pound foolish, that it's cheap right now. And then 50 years from now, we'll go, that was really stupid. I mean, if I have a wad of $100 bills in my pocket, that doesn't mean I light my cigarettes with it because I've got them now. And then a half an hour from now, when I don't have any $100 bills, I curse myself for being stupid. Unfortunately, because we have a generational issue, we're not thinking that well, you know, and if.
Well, are younger people thinking a lot more about these issues?
Some
you
are.
Were on a university campus. What is the consciousness of the young people?
It's not. Well, I think it is. Now it's got a reboot. But about 10 years ago, the National Recycling Coalition did a study just trying to find out how people were thinking about this. And we all assumed, oh, you know, after Earth Day 1990 with Bette Midler as, you know, dressed up as Earth Day, as Mother Earth being wheeled on a gurney into the operating room because she was sick, we figured that everybody would be green. Nope, it's not. And the survey said that young people at that time, say 2010, were not green. There are too many issues. Terrorism, the economy, jobs. What's the next video on YouTube? I mean, everybody's so busy with other issues that environment is not the top priority. And in some ways, that's because we're just not seeing it. And the situation has gotten better in many ways, and the situation has gotten worse in other ways. But it needs to be addressed more fully. And I think we're starting to see some conscious effort on it, and that's going to be helpful.
John, do you have anything else? Because I've got one more question. CJ has been so fascinating today on a subject that I don't think people generally have dug much deeper than the first layer of their trash.
I learned a lot today.
He's taken us much deeper.
I've learned a lot, but go ahead.
Well, the one question that I have, because we talk a lot about technology on America Trends, podcast. And what about the Internet of Things making waste management a lot more efficient and smarter? Where's that taking us in terms of our ability to understand what's going in, what's usable, how efficient the entire recycling program in a city may be? What's going on there with the technology?
Wow, got another hour we could talk about, but I'll be quick about it. The big changes are just in the big basic changes that you're going to see to a certain extent in Waterbury and most other big municipalities is that you're switching from the sort of boxy curbside bin that we saw in the 1990s that you put out the street and somebody would pick up by two hands to an automated or semi-automated system. Well, now, what's that mean? Automated system means the driver never gets out of the truck. He or she drives the truck around.
Well, who needs the driver?
Well, down the road. That's being considered too,
John.
Plus the bins there are so small. I mean, I went out and bought my own bins.
I need about six.
I couldn't fit all the recycling in those little bins.
We've been handing out extra orange bins to people. But the big change in Waterbury is indeed we're shifting up. We're going to be providing more than 31,000 households in Waterbury later this summer with a new 95-gallon cart, which is the same size as the trash cart. And that means you'll have a lot of room to recycle pizza boxes. Yes, we can recycle pizza boxes, cans, bottles, the ubiquitous Amazon.com box. So many items are being purchased now online that homes now have more boxes than they used to. So that's fine. We just need to be able to recover that material. It's very valuable.
And by the way, do you need us to rip them up?
No. The pizza boxes?
No,
the boxes.
The Amazon.
Oh, no, you just put it in. That's one of the great things is many people don't want to spend the time to crunch their box up. And with the little orange bin or the blue bin that many municipalities have had, you had to kind of stomp on it. With this big cart, you generally don't need to. You know, you can if you've had a tough day and you want to crush the box, go for it, Larry, you know.
Well, how important is it psychologically, and then I'll get back to let you finish your thought on all this, where you take the large box today, which is for trash, and bring that down to the level of what you've got for recycling. Is there a psychology to people saying, well, I've got a lot more room? Because I bet a lot of people throw stuff in the trash because they don't have enough in terms of capacity for recycling.
Amen. And that's the big reason why Waterbury is shifting up to – we're doing equal size because we have 95-gallon trash. Now we're going to do 95-gallon recycling. 95-gallon recycling is a standard now for the United States, and the Closed Loop Fund and other folks are really trying to help cities and towns do that. Another big issue, and it's somewhat controversial, is called pay as you throw. And the idea is this. You don't get electricity for free from your city. You don't get water for free from your city. You don't get any of that stuff for free. You don't get internet for free from your city. You don't get food for free. So those are resources you have to pay. The more you use, the more you pay. But guess what? The city is giving you, and most cities around the country are giving their citizens, basically free trash. You can throw out twice as much tomorrow, and it doesn't cost you any more. So that doesn't seem very, pardon me, American. Mm-hmm. It seems almost, pardon me, socialist. That taxpayers, that means everybody is bearing an equal burden for some people who are wasting more, and they're not rewarding people who are wasting or wasting less and recycling more. So pay as you throw is the idea that the more you throw out as trash, the more you pay. Recycling is free. You want to recycle all you want, we'll pick it up for free. We're getting paid for it. But if you throw out one bag of trash or one cart of trash, you pay a certain amount. If I throw out two bags or two carts, I pay twice as much. That they have found to be the single biggest incentive to get people to recycle more and as John's wife does, to divert more through composting. You might say, yeah, maybe I'll start the garden. Well, gosh, if you have to start paying to throw away that food waste, then you might start the garden sooner rather than later. And then we start being less of a nanny state. You know, that's what the beautiful thing is. We're starting to recycle more. We're making sure that we're taking care of our issues. We're not just dumping it down the stream and having taxpayers cover it as part of a tax base.
Okay, is there anything else in closing about the technology that you think really is going to help us along the route to more and better recycling?
Gosh, there are big technological changes down here. What I'm hoping is that we're going to see single stream improve. Right now, as I said, it's hard to separate out glass from paper. There's a lot of contamination. My hope is that we're going to see single stream get to the point where they can recover glass more safely. In the meantime, however, there's certain things we shouldn't mix together. And right now, if we can keep our glass bottles out through the 5-cent deposit or a 10-cent deposit, then we're going to be helping keep that stream clean. We're going to be making a saleable material instead of just a less dirty one.
If, in fact, glass is such a problem, in closing, why is it that things like wine bottles and olive oil or whatever else is not part of that 10-cent return or 5-cent return?
Ooh, you're asking such a good question, Larry, because in Connecticut, I think the legislative session just ended, and I didn't get to see the final results. There was a movement afoot to expand the bottle bill so that wine bottles or Gatorade bottles, some glass, some plastic, would be included for a deposit. And if they did so, that would ensure that these materials are kept as valuable materials and not mixed in. So the supermarkets, who have often bared the burden for this, don't want to be accepting more cans and bottles back. They say, our job is to sell food, not take back the container. So they're justifiably concerned. And there was a movement to sort of parse that away from the supermarkets and have more redemption centers so that it could be done in that
way. That would be standalone.
We'd be standalone or perhaps near them.
Yeah.
Now, that's still being contested, and it's a national debate, and each state is handling it in its own way.
CJ May, in closing, is there any message that you want to give to anybody who's listening to this America Trends podcast about recycling? I mean, you do such a great job of educating people. What would you leave them with as a message about their responsibility?
Well, it's not just about responsibility. It's about magic. I think recycling is about magic because I met a magician who, when found out that I did recycling, Jim Sisti, a local magician here, took scraps of newspaper off of his coffee table and in an instant remade those scraps into a new newspaper. He showed me how magical recycling is. And so I used his help to set up a show called Recycling is Magic to teach people about the magic of recycling. But the point is, you don't have to be a magician to do magic. Every time you put cans, bottles, papers, and cardboard boxes into a recycling bin, you are doing magic. You're making old things into new, you're saving money, and you're saving the world at the same time. That's what a good wizard should do.
Well, this has been magical. John, really, have we learned something today?
We've learned a lot.
Oh, that's amazing. CJ May, we didn't oversell you. There is no one like him, and remarkable, and he's doing just a great job here in this city, and of course now helping a lot of people across the country to better understand these issues as part of our broadcast or our episode today.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you, CJ.
You're welcome.
Keep up the good work.
I'm delighted to have a great conversation with you guys. Thank you.
If you like this episode, please leave us a kind rating or review. I'm on my hands and knees. Please do it on iTunes because your review is really critical for us to continue providing this podcast. And John, I know that iTunes looks at this. They want to make certain that we have some ranking, some visibility, and that we're getting some traffic, and then they give you better positioning.
Absolutely. And this way, it'll put us in the forefront so you can find us much easier on your iPhone or Android, whatever you may be using.
And they may even send you out an alert. So please, if you can, don't miss a single episode of America Trends Podcast. And, John, they can subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher.com.
And also subscribe on our website.
Oh, absolutely.
We send out a little blurb, and we can also take your emails there at newsletter@rifkinradio.com. That's another way to get us.
And we do not sell or share our lists.
No spamming, nothing.
Well, I don't know. Does anybody want our lists? I don't know, but we don't do it.
Good question.
Even if they asked us.
Nobody's asked us.
And when you do subscribe, let us know on Facebook and Twitter. We're getting very active on Facebook and Twitter. Our handle on both platforms, and John, this is really easy, at Trends Podcast. That's it.
That's real easy.
You like that? Did you get that?
I got that.
Okay.
I'm going to have to check it out now. I'm going to have to tweet it.
We want to thank you, of course, personally for subscribing. And we also would like to get some of your ideas and questions for future episodes of America Trends Podcast. And that's important, too, because we're all over the map. our interest editorially in the future, John, has no bounds. But we want to know what it is that you'd like to hear from us, if there was a segment that you'd like to see us follow up on, or if there's something in depth that you'd like us to deal with. Please let us know that,
yeah,
too.
We're looking at the future. There's so much we can look at.
Yeah, and the topics that we've dealt with, I mean, we have gotten such incredible guests over the recent period, but they're only going to come to us if they know we've got an engaged and interactive audience.
Absolutely.
So it's really important that you become part of this podcast in so many different ways that we're sharing with you today.
You're absolutely right. We need your support and your help and your reviews.
And your ideas.
And ideas.
Or questions on Facebook and Twitter. And by the way, you can direct message us at Trends Podcast or using the hashtag Trends Podcast. You can also add an email address if you have a public one that you'd like us to give out.
Yeah, good. And you know what? We didn't mention Amazon.
Oh, yes. We have an Amazon store.
Yes.
And so if you go up, you don't have to buy the things that might be highlighted at that particular time. You can buy any book, and there's some benefit that comes back to us.
Just put what you're looking at in the little search engine block there, and it'll take you right to Amazon, and it'll help us out.
Absolutely. And it doesn't really cost you anything more, because they have built that into their pricing structure. So we get a little taste, and you get more programming like this, and you get the item that you were looking for. So it works
Absolutely.
For all of us.
It's a win-win.
Absolutely. Win-win-win.
Win-win-win.
So for more information on America Trends and for the latest updates on upcoming episodes, be sure to like our page on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. You can find us at Trends Podcast. And again, you can find John and I here in our studio performing as best we can for you.
That's right. Let us out.
What's that?
Let us out.
Let us out. No one is. Hey, listen, thank you so much for joining us today on America Trends. We'll see you next time.
We hope to hear from you soon.
Oh, by the way, we are posting all the time, and we're posting on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Good point.
So just be aware, if you're looking for new episodes, they're coming on Tuesdays and Thursdays. When you wake up, before you go out on your jog or your walk and you want to take us with you, we'll be there for you.
Very good.
All right. Have a great day.